Yo, what's cracking? This your homeboy Ice Cube, and you tuned in to Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. You know what it is, baby.
Hey, everybody, this is Mike with the Mountain Weekly News. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 44 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. This week's podcast is being sponsored by Telos Snowboards. Telos Snowboards are the manufacturer of some badass boards. These guys actually, their parent company, their factory in China, GP87, makes about 70% of the snowboards in the industry. So you know these boards are going to rip. TelosSnowboards.com. This week's special guest is Mike Rankwit. Mike Rankwit is a professional snowboarder. If you were around in the 80s and 90s or have worked in the snowboard industry, you probably know who Mike is. And if you're new to snowboarding, you're probably like, who in the hell is this guy? If that's the case, you definitely want to listen to this podcast episode. It ended up going about an hour. Typically, our episodes are 30 minutes, but man, me and Mike, we hit it off. We had a lot to say. So be sure to enjoy. Make sure you've got the time to listen to this entire episode. It is a banger. Ladies and gentlemen, this week's guest is Mike Rankwit. Mike's a professional snowboarder. He's been in the industry for a minute. If you like this podcast, you should just go over to iTunes right now, hit pause, go check out Rad Matters podcast. It is quite entertaining. So Mike, welcome to the show, man. Appreciate having you on.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Right on. How you guys doing?
Oh, life's good. I was just listening to one of your episodes and you were talking about, you know, Terrier and how kind of the industry isn't supporting him. And there's one thing, I worked with Burton Snowboard for years, and three or four years ago, our relationship got really kind of, it was on the rocks, and their marketing director was living in Manhattan, New York. And so the person I was dealing with was just not involved in the shred industry, and they had put a lot of people into these positions where it's so far from the snowboarding I grew up. You know, when I first saw snowboarding, it was kind of this generation of like, you know, fuck you and punk rock, and dudes were driving fast and there was chicks, and even the same thing with surfing. And lately it's like all these people, like that whole, if you support that, the industry doesn't want you. And one of the things I heard you talking about is just how people that have made the industry what it is, at a certain point, they just get forgotten about. And so how has that affected like you and the people that you were shredding with back in the day?
Well, like in a lot of ways, say back then, I had a lot of foresight into how things would eventually be because I paid attention to like skateboarding and surfing. But, you know, snowboarding was a little bit different beast in that it kind of like, you know, if you look at these three sports of like rollerblading or whatever you call it, inlining, fucking windsurfing and snowboarding, they all started about the same time.
Right.
You know, inline skating had no chance. I watched this documentary on how it died the other night, and it came to the crux of the show, and it was like, one word can sum it up, skateboarding. You know? It was just really funny. But it's absolutely right, because they had no edge, no kids wanted to do it. And then I live in Maui, and I kite surf quite a bit. And so there's this like, there's a lot of older kite surfers and that were windsurfers. And windsurfing just, it did not follow the ethos of surfing. It just thought it was so unique and cool and our own thing. And now it's just not even a fucking sport, you know? Whereas snowboarding, it's like basically because of myself, Cardiel, and probably Selaznik, there's probably one or two on that list. But yeah, we're the ones that made it cool with skateboarding and got kind of the industry, whether they knew it or not at the time, to kind of follow our lead. You know, if you look at magazines in the mid 80s, it's like everyone had jester hats on and you know, like three piece business suit and a half pipe, dude snowboarding, you know, like it was just like crazy and zany, you know. And then it just took a turn where it kind of started following like myself and Noah, and then eventually Cardiel, but like, and then all of a sudden this whole skate style influence was the whole sport. And then the sport, all of a sudden it's like, it's considered a board sport. It's like, you know, surfing, skateboarding, snowboarding, it's one of those. Whereas, you know, windsurfing, it never made that cut. And if you look at where it went, you know, and snowboarding, it was like, it just blew up so hard. And then I think it just, I forgot your original question. I'm just rambling.
No, I mean, we were, you know, just kind of talking about how it's changed, you know, generationally and kind of that image that snowboarding was portraying. And then, you know, how they just chew people up and spit them out. I mean, we got to blame you for everybody buttering, don't we? Were you the guy that came up with buttering the muffin? I mean, come on, bro.
Yeah, fully. Yeah. I love that, dude. Like, you know, it's a funny one in that, in a way, it bugged me for a long time, right? Like, you know, and I did that shit for years before we ever filmed it in Roadkill. I remember when Dave wanted to film it, I thought he was joking. It's just something I did right before I hit the lift. And Selaznik would always, like, follow me and be like, dude, how the fuck are you doing that, you know? And I was like, I don't know, I'm just pretending I'm doing a lip slide on a skateboard, you know? And then Dave sort of filmed it, and it just fucking, okay, this kind of correlates with what I was about, kind of like going towards in the last rant, but like, what made snowboarding so appealing in the early 90s was the fact that, in a lot of ways, a dude that never snowboarded or snowboarded very little, maybe skates a little, not that good, whatever, they would watch those films and be like, whoa, you know, basically, I could go do that shit.
Wow. Thank you for saying that. I'm going to cut you off real quick. I just had Danny Davis on the podcast, and I don't think he liked it when I kind of asked them about the progression of the sport, because it used to be you could watch videos and you could be like, wow, I could go out and do that. And even like the first comps, you're like, oh, these dudes are doing like straight airs, or like, oh, that dude did a board slide. Oh, that dude did a method. Oh, he did a...
What didn't he like about it? Like, what do you mean?
It was more like, well, the progression's always going to be there. And, you know, and I was stoked to see him, you know, the switch method. I was like, how will that kind of style be able to compete with the guy doing the triple cork, you know, off axe, you know, ballerina type snowboarding? And I think that really, like, even the big mountain stuff, you know,
it just got too gnarly.
It did. Fucking,
right? No, that's what I was getting at. Yeah, I mean, that's what happened in the 2000s. It's like, you know, I always look at, like, snowboarding was, like, just so, such a narcissist if it was a person. You know, it just stared at itself in the mirror in all these years, you know, through the 2000s, just so impressed. But it wasn't looking where it was going or where it came from, you know? It was just like in the now, and everything's got to be in the now. And, you know, it got to a point, you know, if you're just a dude that liked to snowboard a lot, once you miss a season and then go back, watch a video, or, you know, 2005, 8, 10.
Oh, you're done. You know, like, you're not.
Yeah. No, it went so far, so fast. Yeah. But all of a sudden it just made it uninteresting because it was like unachievable, you know, like, okay, maybe I'll watch some backcountry stuff. And then you just see like, Jeremy Jones is clinging to a fucking oververt face, you know what I mean? And that's just rad. So is all the other stuff. But to the people snowboarding, the people that actually, you know, buy shit and fund the industry, it's like we completely turn them off, you know, like to shut the spigot off and just showed everything was just got too gnarly. Like, you know, some kid whose name you can't pronounce going off a fucking jump that you'd never even think of hitting, you know, doing some fucking variation of a trick you couldn't even fathom in a million years. And right there, it's like you just lost a lot of your customers, you know. And at the same time, though, skiing as an industry, and it was like kind of clowned on at the time, they just went full family style. Like, if you look like the early 2000s, they had like, you know, ski package deals. Every brand had like $99. And, you know, snowboarding still doesn't have that. You know, the stuff for kids is laughable. It's just like nothing's thought through. You know, they don't think about where they're going. Whereas skiing, I think at some point, like some trade show, like roundtable meeting of all the ski industry, you know, in 2002, they're like, okay, let's admit it. We're fucked. We're so far from cool. What are we going to do? How are we going to survive? Hey, let's come up. Let's all sell junior packages for $99 and we'll just farm the next generation. And that's exactly what they did. And it's like all of a sudden kids are skiing, but they made it accessible. They didn't only show one side of their sport, which was like the gnarliest shit of the gnarly, you know. They also showed family skiing, and maybe not, I just saying family because that's not like what skiing portrayed or conveyed that they were, you know. But it was like snowboarding just was still going full bore. It's like, if you miss a trick snowboarding, you're going to fucking you know, you're going to hit your head so hard, you not might not wake up. You know what I mean?
For sure.
It just got gnarly and it's like not fun. And then if you look back at like thinking about this a month or two ago, just for some reason, just something with roadkill came up. I was talking to a friend and I was just started thinking like, fucking, that was the crux moment, like 92, when it's the floodgates opened, because all these people realized that they could go do this. They could actually go up. Yeah, I could do a frontside 360. I could do a shifty. And maybe some of it was like fucking, you know, it's just got monotonous after time. But like, it's just, you know, it just got gnarly, you know. And I think some of it is played into the fact that, you know, snowboarders, most of them anyways, you know, they maybe they skated a little, but they really secretly want or wish to be skaters. So it's like they took any kind of trend or cool thing in skating and just rode it to the fucking ground, you know? Like, oh, they like baggy jeans? Okay, we'll run that shit till 2019. Oh, they like, you know, puffy looking shoes? We'll, you know, not look into technological advances in our boots, but we'll make them look like fucking puffed up skate shoes with laces, you know, like
this is how I feel right now about the whole snow surf movement. I grew up surfing and if somebody asked me what I do, I'm a surfer. I mean, I snowboard for work and, you know, I test all this shit. I surf, yeah. I travel, I love to surf. It takes a minute to figure that out. And now you've got all these kids that live in the mountains that have never fucking surfed. Like I'll just say Alex Yoder, the face of Patagonia and Gentum Stick. Oh, snow surfing and fucking carving. And I'm like, bro.
Hey guys, guess what? I've been doing that shit for 40 fucking years, you know? Like,
and I asked him one day, I was like, so do you surf? And he's like, no, I've never really had the time to put in. And I'm like, how fucking unauthentic can you get?
Dude, I had something yesterday. A friend of mine was in town from Bend, Oregon. This guy, Buster, and he just had a catalog, Gentem catalog, you know? He was just flipping through it. And for, I like, it just was so plain, those boards.
Right.
It was just really weird. It's like, oh, they forgot to put graphics on their board.
I'm pretty sure the GP87 is making all their boards now.
The good ones.
That'll take us into Telos. Yeah, they're making their best boards.
They have for a while, like their high-end boards.
And same with Karua, you know, Karua, everyone's like, oh, and you go on Alibaba and you can buy all the patterns and all the shapes. You're like, oh, dude, these guys are just having a different factory in a different country make all their boards and they've got access to materials and designs.
That's so funny you brought up that kid's name, because I was thinking about last night driving home and I was like, I don't even know if I want to start to go there. You know, like just the fact that he has a pro model.
Thank you.
On Gentem Stick. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? You know, like, it's just really weird to me. That's like, okay, imagine, let's just say, the Cummings family, like, fucking Temple and his kid, right? Like, he just moves to Hawaii one day, and fucking his kid has a pro model surfboard 4 years later. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that would never fly.
Right.
And he'd be like, oh, bro, what the fuck? Who the fuck do you think you are? I don't give a fuck, you know? Like, it's because, like, they have morals. They care about their sport a lot, you know? And this type of shit just, like, the whole, like, I do like, I've been in Japan, you know, for 30-plus years and probably 60, 70 trips over there. And to be honest, 90% of it was crap snow, you know? It's not always great over there. But I went to Nisei a couple of years ago, and it was kind of like nice to see, because I saw the Japanese era and everyone was like, next pro model board, all the average people there were riding kind of powderish boards, which I thought was kind of cool. And they just enjoy turning. And so they've kind of created this cool thing in that, like, but like, you know, just shots of just some random Japanese dude with his hands in the air and a fucking heel turn all fucking squatted over. It's like, what the fuck is that? That's like a sloppy turn, you know? Sorry.
I always laughed because in surfing, if you put your board that far on edge, you're not going to fucking make the wave. You're going to go right onto your face. And, you know, imagine if there was the localism that we see in surfing and snowboarding. And like,
just a hit.
Dude. All right, let's talk about my favorite place to snowboard in the world and the community there, Mount Baker. Let's talk about, I want to talk about you and your relationship with Craig Kelly and Kelly Joe. Let's talk about Mount Baker snowboard.
Who? Kelly. No, just kidding. I'm kidding.
I was like, Mount Baker snowboard shop and definitely George Dobis and kind of what that area has done, because I meet people, and I heard this on your podcast. You're like, you tell people, like, dude, if you think you snowboard, like, go to Baker, spend a season up in fucking Glacier or Maple Falls and figure out a different side of the industry. And I did that. Your friend, George St. Claim, he was a friend of mine, and he's like, bro, you're blowing it. You're in fucking Colorado. He's like, you need to go to Baker. And he just 3 or 4 years, and finally I went on a La Nina year in 2011, and it snowed 834 inches that year.
Yeah, dude. It's like, people have no idea. I talk to just friends of mine that are like in the industry or whatever, pros on different levels. Like, and I've heard this term in the last year. It's like, you should go ride. I do need to, you know, do some training and powder. And it's just like, dude, you just missed the mark so fucking hard.
Right.
Like, yeah, I just need to learn to land my jumps and powder. Just go fucking ride powder and you're just gonna land in powder. It's easy. You know, it's like that whole, it's like, what do you call it? It's just something to check off in a way, you know?
And if people want to do Baker, they better do it soon, because the year that I lived there in 2011, there was never any crowds. Like every once in a while at Chair 8, there'd be a few people. And I read this article from you in 96 Snowboarder, and you're like, dude, Baker's blown out by noon. And now the pictures I'm seeing, it's full on lift lines just to get first chair.
Well, you know why that is. It's a whole different breed of rider up there. And yeah, I respect these guys, but none of them know the ski area itself. They use that first chair in the morning to access backcountry. And that's cool. Fucking get out there. Blah, blah, blah. I started snowboarding. I didn't start snowboarding to fucking slug up a mountain. I want to fucking lap a chairlift, you know, like I just want to go ride. I don't want to be a mountaineer. I don't want to be a fucking, you know. And so it's like these guys have a different, you know, they're more into that. And, you know.
But then even a lot of those lines, like you got to be the first one in there, or heaven forbid you get some
not
kook.
Even, dude, like say last year, I noticed this about 10 years ago. Wow, those guys are so proficient with what they're doing in the backcountry. They never learned to ride the ski area. None of them know anything in the ski area.
So they're not down. They're not rip and fly on the wall type of thing.
Fuck no. No way. Like none of it. Like they're all doing kind of, you know, like, you know, just low grade powder turns out there. You know, maybe there's a steep section up top, but like there's so much rad shit in that ski area, you know, and if you can't figure that out, and even when it starts to get tracked, that's where you got to be creative and find different lines. But like, you know, I could say, go do a line at like, say 9:30 a.m. I come back at noon. My track's the only one that's been in it all day. It's something that would have been tracked out by 9:30 a.m. in the 90s.
Okay, so you're seeing more people just go straight out into the backcountry, hightailing. I guess that's the same in Jackson Hole. You know, like, I don't ride the village, but if you go and get that first tram, every single dude has their airbag.
It's like poo-pooed upon to, like, go, you know, ride the Sierra. I remember just seeing these guys, like, lined up at Chair Circus, like, you know, like, stomping their feet. Yeah, can't wait. I was just over on Up and Up, fucking just lapping a lower hotel, just fucking neck deep every turn.
How would you describe Baker to people? I tell people it's like a giant skateboard park. You know, it's not a ton of vert, but just fun. Shit to hit everywhere.
It's like just a little adventure land. You're like, you feel like a little kid going out and like building a fort in the woods, or, you know, you're kind of like just running through the woods all day. Yeah, it can be really, really, really fun there. And yeah, it's just funny that just how, you know, like, say, I was talking to some guys in the bar last year up there, or 2 years ago. And, you know, like I was referring to some of the shit we were doing that morning. None of them had any idea where any of it was. And I was just talking about, you know, like, you know, it's just basic shit, you know, hairy, scary. You know what I mean? That was a mogul field in the 90s. You can still pin a line through there now. Is nobody does it from the top. You can just save that one for like 3 p.m., you know, and go back and get it, you know?
Have you noticed a big change in Glacier and Maple Falls? I mean, I don't know if Milano's is still there, but last time I went through, I tried to get the chicken gorgonzola and they were closed. And it just seems, you know, the cost of living, I mean, definitely in most ski towns that I know of, it's not really a place that you can move to as a young kid or a bum. I mean, if you don't have access to some cash, you're not going to be able to throw first, last, and deposit on a place. And an average room right now in Jackson's about $1,500 just to rent a room. People are buying, you know, condos for $500,000. I'm like, whoa, that's a whole different style of people that are moving in.
Well, I'd say Baker is basically, you know, and I think it was back in the day and I didn't realize it, but it's, there's so many like just Upper East Coast kind of rich kids, maybe on their fucking like gap year before college, you know, they go to Baker and just kind of ski bum around, and it's all that. That's what it is. I remember saying, what was it? I don't know, 2008, I did a season up there and it was a really fun season for me. But like driving up, like I had an Audi TT at the time with fucking like, you know, Blizzax all the way around. Like it was insane.
Rallying up the mountain.
And like I get up to the parking lot almost daily and someone would come up to my car. And you're like, what the fuck? You passed me out in a fucking blind corner, man. And I was like, dude, you know, in my head, I'm like, that's what you saw, you know?
Right.
I would never just say this because they're not going to believe me anyways. I just throw them the keys to my car. Be like, rip it out in the back parking lot right now and tell me I'm crazy. Tell me I'm that far out of my mind. And one dude took me up on it. Anyone drove my car around. And I was like, jump on it, you know? And he was like, yeah, you're right. This thing's insane.
Well, and you guys used to have pretty debaucherous drives down that mountain, yeah. Right? So it's like,
yeah. So it's like, I had that.
You know
and,
it.
But like, there's just places you can pass, you know? And you might not, you have to look to see if any cars are coming the corner before. And if you don't know the road that well, then it looks crazy. You know what I mean? Just everyone kind of turned into like, no one was from Washington, you know, say, Washington back in the day in the like late 80s, early 90s, it was like just the bands from there. The, you know, Microsoft was from there, fucking Starbucks, just everything was happening there. So like to kind of come up at Baker, you had to be fucking good, you know. You know, Craig and I were at the top of that little food chain. And so it's like dudes had to, you know, impress to come up or kind of be badass, kind of. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you guys are setting a bar for sure. And you know, it's interesting. Like when I see somebody make a good powder turn and that really on the heel side, like it's a generation of like dudes that were riding hard in the 90s and it's all camber, you know, and it's a very, there's just that certain style. You're like, oh shit, these people know how to make a turn on the mountain fall line, like where you're supposed to make the turn. And it makes snowboarding look so simple. Just so easy. I mean, and like you said, like that, just that Washington crew, because that's where Craig was from. I mean, that's where like Temple's from, right? The people I know that have cut their teeth growing up there, it's like, dude, they're gnarly. Forrest Berkey, all those kids. I'm just like, holy shit, what the fuck?
It's a trip, you know? Like, I don't know. One thing that, I've been wanting to go into it on one of my podcasts, but it's like, it's such a big thing for me to go into on my podcast, but like, one thing I'd say that changed my riding 100% and I'd never go back in a million years is drop my high backs about 15 years ago. I rode a high back in almost 2 decades. And that is like, and people look at, you know, people look, oh, that's crazy. He must have like gnarly ankles. No, I broke both my ankles like 6 times apiece. They're frail. Got a new hip. You know, I'm not like some, you know, some Laird Hamilton build here. But it's like, I mean, it's such a fucking like rabbit hole. Like say, if I say to a snowboarder, I'm on a plane and I meet a snowboarder, hey, have you ever tried to ride without high backs? They like, you know, they'll spit their coffee out almost on you. Like what, huh? Like what the fuck in their heads? Like they think if I'm gonna do a heel turn, I'm just gonna fall over.
Right. And your background in skateboarding and surfing teaches you that. It's like, you don't need a high back. Heaven forbid, you don't even want your feet locked in the way that we have to lock in snowboarding. Like, they just don't get that, like, heel to toe and that torsional flex. And
I mean, forward lean on a fucking snowboard boot and binding and bindings. I mean, you really think you need leverage. I don't know. You need leverage for a lot of things, you know, like, you know, you get a pulley system if you want to fucking, you know, put something up in the air with a little work. But like, it's your own fucking body. You need a leverage system with that. Like that to me just seems like extremely like lazy.
Well, and you know your stuff. I mean, you were one of the first guys that was like, you know, mitts versus gloves. I mean, had you already been established in the industry as Craig was starting to come up? I had heard that you were kind of doing like advisor stuff for Craig, or I know you guys were living together. I mean,
I would never say like advisor, but like really looking back, it kind of was, you know. But I was a skater, and like I met Craig my first time. I went up, I think, Ski Acres on a fucking rainy night. I met him, and you know, this is like 84 probably, and he took my number. He's like, my dad lives in Mount Vernon. If you can get to my frat on Friday night, I'm gonna go up and ride Mount Baker, you know, and I've got some friends up there and blah, blah, blah. So that's how that started. And then, you know, I get up there and like, say, everybody was a piece of his, like kind of a piece of him, like Dano, he was like the surfer, you know, he just had like really good style and like, kind of like, that's what he pushed. You know, where Fulton was more of a skater, not say as much as I was, probably just because he's a little older, but he was also a BMX racer. And Craig was really good at being, you know, like, so all these little pieces of him were like, or, and I, you know, like argue with him going up the chairlift about how to grab a method air, you know, because at the time he would, you know, more or less grab his tip like everybody else. Nobody had thought about it. And I just finally explained, like, to me, grabbing the tip on the method air and just kind of doing that rocket move, that's like what a skier would do their first time in the air on a snowboard.
I could just picture the fluorescent color and that full grab that you're talking about right now. And it's like,
I remember my dad passed away some years ago. Just, you know, there's a stack of magazines at his house. And you could see the year that he stopped arguing with me on that. And he grabbed it down near his fucking foot. You know what I mean?
And now, did he switch to soft boots? Or was he one of those guys like Farmer that could still actually punt out with hard boots?
He was soft boots the whole time. Maybe he rode hard boots here and there for a race. But no, he was soft boots all the way. In fact, you know, he won the overall world championships in soft boots, meaning like he beat, you know, won the slalom, won the GS, won the downhill. And that was like the year all the Europeans put their fucking, their hard boots down. Because they got beat, you know, they got beat by this guy, you know what I mean? But, you know, he was like, he was just really smart on shit. I don't know. Yeah, he's like, I can go on and on about that.
How did it feel, or what were people saying when Craig left Washington and moved up to Nelson, or, you know, Whitewater, and started guiding? Was that?
It just made sense. It was cool enough. Like, he spent a lot of time, like, just doing different stuff. I remember at one point, you know, him and Olivia, I think, they drove from, like, you know, the tip of Alaska to the tip of Chile, you know? And in preparation for that trip, he'd always be in Seattle getting stuff done for his car or his van, whatever he had at the time. So we were spending a lot of time together then. That's when he kind of met Olivia, and he was up there, and like he got involved with just the Baldface crew. Just, I think he even invested some of his own money. You know, he also invested in Island Lake Lodge years before, you know, and other things. You know, there's all sorts of little kind of mom and pop, you know, what do you call it? Cat skiing things up in DC. And they wouldn't allow that in Washington State, I think. You know, there's some laws with the US Forest Service. It's just something he wanted to do. I don't think he considered it the best terrain in the world. I think he really liked it. Just like I've been to Baldface a couple of times. It's good. It's not like, oh my, it's not like going to Valdez for the first time, or the, you know, or even the Baker ski area, you know, with a good person that knows how to get around there. What do you call it? Yeah, that whole thing is just weird to me. Just, I don't know. I could go into it, but.
What about snowboarders taking themselves too seriously these days? I mean, it's something that, I mean, I cringe. I'm like, it just has gone so business and so pro. And it's like, I mean, heaven forbid somebody puke somewhere. I mean, what was it like 3 years ago? You showed up at OR with a new snowboard company, and you guys were wearing all black, and there was fucking 40-ounce beer fucking bottles, and it looked like a hurricane had come through the booth after day one. And one of the boards was called like the Angel Dust Snowboard. And you just had this group of like, where like 15 years ago, like I almost think the industry would have like fully supported it. Like, yeah, this is snowboarding. And now it's like, oh dude, you can't, like, you can't act that way. My best friend here is an Australian, and the term of endearment that they give each other is a sick cunt. And so we're always like, oh bro, you sick cunt. You're such a fag. And it's like, that kind of shit doesn't fly anymore. And it's not coming from like a homophobic or trying to be an asshole. It's just like, man, this is how we just talked. And like, I grew up surfing and like, I was a grom and we used to have the adults just fucking beat on us, you know, like fully.
Yeah, dude, Dan and Craig were so fucking mean to me, you know?
Like, good.
Yeah, it's like fucking, it's so fucking weird. The whole, and that whole Terrier issue, are you fucking kidding me?
Right.
It's like, there's nothing that guy ever did when he touched a snowboard that every snowboarder in the world didn't benefit from in some way, whether they knew it or not. The industry made money, and then they just would like let him just go, you know, just get run over on the bus that they're all sitting on. You know, they're all getting a free ride on that bus.
Well, and I noticed with Burton, you know, a few years ago, they did the Gwen Stefani collection, Burton Walt Disney collection, and Burton, it's not even called Burton Snowboards anymore. It's just called Burton. And so it's like, okay. And again, you know, they've gotten better now with their marketing team. I'm working with some good people, but when the person that was in charge of their marketing was living in downtown Manhattan, I was like, you guys are out of touch. Like, you gotta.
The one thing I'd say about that, I think I know who you're referring to. I was pretty tight with him, right? And like, no matter his background, where he came from, where, you know, whatever he's doing now, he did know a lot about snowboarding. You know, like, he knew enough that he took care of me really well.
Oh, I'm talking about a chick, but I'm glad there is people that, no, this was some girl that was over there that I was working with.
And it wasn't his wife.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to look into that.
Was it Anne-Marie?
It was Anne-Marie.
Yeah, those two, like...
Like, we were testing gear, and they asked me to send everything back, and I said, do you want me to send the long johns back, too? And they said, everything. And I said, so should I wash them? Because my taint smell is really bad. And at that point, Burton, just, I was blacklisted. And now they have a different media team. Now they're in-house. They're like, oh, we'd love for you to test our shit, blah, 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 blah. I have an article on my website that says Burton Snowboards doesn't care about you. They care about China. And it just goes off. It doesn't care about you. They care about China. And, you know, it's like the amount of jobs they took out of Vermont and just moved overseas. And it's just, I mean, it is a business. But I also, you know, because this started.
It's a woke business, too, though.
For sure. You know?
And that's how they're making their decisions based on that. All go to the grave thinking that it was not Terrier that woke up one morning thinking, well, maybe I ought to apologize for that 4-year-old tweet that I apologized back then for. Again, just randomly out of the blue. Maybe I'll just pump that out.
Well, and this is the society. I mean, God, heaven forbid. Imagine in 10, 20 years when I run for office somewhere and somebody pulls up this podcast and they're like, remember that day? Remember that day you and Mike talked this way? It's like, wow.
This whole stuff will be so far gone by then. This will be like a blight on our history. You know, like, I firmly believe that. They're going to look back on these times as like, yeah, it got pretty dark there for a while. You know, everybody thought they were gay. Everybody, you know what I mean? Like,
I got a cousin who's Native American, and I sent him this really cool, I was at a Grateful Dead show, and I got this like cool Native American head wrap with the Grateful Dead logo, lightning bolt. He was so offended because apparently the Native American headdress is now offensive if a white person can. It was just,
well,
like,
guess what,
wow.
Guys? You guys fucking, like, you know, I don't know. It's like, you lost the war or whatever. You don't own that. Like,
right.
You know, it's like, fucking fuck you. You know, I don't know. I just get so over that shit.
And I was given a gift, you know. It's like, if I don't like you, I'm not going to give you something or talk to you. And but all right, let's switch gears a little. You've had some heavy hitters that have come into your life. Vin Diesel, were you a stunt double for that dude? And if so, what's he like?
He was never on set. Let's put it that way. I think I saw him in a hotel lobby one time once. And, you know, I was fucking yeah, Three Sheets to the Wind gambling in South Lake, you know, like, hold my beer.
Solid. In Triple X, you were his stunt double for snowboarding.
Yeah, me and Jeremy Jones.
You and Jeremy. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And my friend James Kleindienst. Because it was like, once they had sun and everything they wanted just cameras to roll. So they would just have three of us in the same outfit. You know what I mean?
For sure.
And it made sense at $1 million a day fucking production, you know?
Let's talk about Washington, the music scene, and just music in general. You've seen some people in music come into snowboarding. Again, that's when I started my website. It was music and sports, and people were like, oh, how do these go together? I mean, do you feel there's a lot of other people that...
We were like the rock star's rock star in the early, mid-90s.
As snowboarders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they wanted to hang out with us. Like, say, you know, Yauch or Scotty Inn, all these guys, like, they knew fucking, okay, if I want to go ride really good snow, I could spend years trying to find it on my own. Or I could just kind of show up on one of these guys' trips and fucking tag along, you know? And that's what they did. And it was fun. Like, any friend of mine in a band back then, it was like, it was just a gnarly time. Like,
and your ethos, you guys, it was the same type of thing. Like, if you guys were out drinking or partying or playing music or lighting fireworks, like, everybody kind of had that, like, again, it's a side of snowboarding that I missed. I just saw a video from Mount Baker, and these dudes are ripping dirt bikes in the parking lot. I forget what the video, it might be the new Vans one. And you can hear Gwen like call in on the radio and call these guys like, oh my God, you can't be doing this. And it's just like, I would bet even rallying your car in the parking lot at Baker these days would probably get, you know, somebody might come and say something. And it's just like,
yeah, it's so ridiculous. It's such a, I just didn't buy into the Northwest gang thing. You know, I'm not the Mervin Manufacturing guys. I love all those guys, but like, there's a whole, you know, Mount Baker, Mervin Manufacturing. Like, okay, do you remember a couple of years ago when the fucking snowboard shop, it was kind of back for a minute?
Uh-huh.
And it was some dude running it.
Not Marcel, right?
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, for sure.
What the fuck was that? And they all went along with it. It's like, you know, Marcelo was like Gnu's first, you know, retailer pretty much, you know. You know, she had to be like, I remember talking to her at the time. It was just gnarly. It's like that's when like just the wheels came off in so many different ways, because like no one gave a shit about Marcelo or the company she built or what she wanted to do with it. It was all like, give that thing to me and I can do so much with it, you know, but it's not yours. It's not yours to take. And that dude just kind of took it and everybody went along with him. Like, you know, dudes worked in his shop, but like, that was so shocking to me that like, when I finally got up there that year, I was talking to Marcella all the time, emailing with her a lot, and just in disbelief, myself and Bass and one or two other people. We saw it clearly like that. Like, who the fuck is this guy? He just comes into town, takes Marcella's shop name, opens up a shop across the street, and dudes that used to work for her aren't even disgruntled with her, now work for him. It's like they couldn't get a job at the pot farm down the street for $15 an hour. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, how, you know, you can't see you're being used, that you're part of the narrative this guy's building. You don't see that, you know? The first time I met that dude, I was just like, fucking kook. Like, I didn't even want to, it was just creepy. It was weird.
There's probably a lot of people up in that community that don't even know who George Dobis is. Or, you know, I'm sure maybe they've heard of Mount Baker Hardcore, but it's like.
Yeah, that's cool. But there's a whole side of like, if somebody owns a business, whether it's doing good or firing off or not, you know, if there's a, I don't know, fucking Bill's Burger across the street from me, whether I know the history of it or not, I don't just come to town, start working there, and then just open up the new Bill's Burger across the street and take all his clients and all his vendors. Like, all the vendors just went with this new shop. And it was like, you know, with Mervin, it was like all of a sudden they got like hard sales guys on her. You know, well, you don't move. And I'm like, well, Marcella, you compete with the fact that, you know, probably 400 snowboards are given away in that single county alone by that brand alone. It's kind of hard to sell them after a while.
They're either getting hooked up, they're on the pro deal, the bro deal. Yeah,
come on. Yeah, they get them $100, you know, $150 out the back of the factory or something. It's like, really, you guys are going to get gnarly sales on her now? But it was just like mind-blowing. It was like the raping of the fucking Northwest legacy holders, you know? Fucking some dude from Canada just came in kind of like, it's like they just stole the tip jar, you know? It was like, hey, there's this fucking legacy kicking it over here. I think it's Craig Kelly. Like, anyone using this right now? Is anyone looking? Is that cool? Okay, fuck it. Let's go. You know, and they just kind of walked off with their new legacy and just kind of did what they wanted to do with it and built businesses around it. Kind of like this guy in Mount Baker. I just couldn't believe they allowed, you know what I mean? Like, just no moral compass at all. Like, oh, a new guy. He's nice. He bought me a drink. He thinks I'm cool. You know, it's like.
Right. He gave me a sticker. Cool. Sweet, bro.
Yeah, it's just. Off a logo that somebody else made. And it's just fucking weird. That whole thing, it's like really, that's a microcosm of the entire industry, you know?
Let's pivot from Mervin to Tilo Snowboards. Last year was the first time, or 2 years ago was the first time I got to ride those boards. And
which boards?
The Tilos.
Oh, the Telos. Telos, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Telos. And the first time, you know, I was just like, wow, these are sick. And then the shapes looked pretty familiar. And then last year, I think we tested two or three. We tested one of their split boards. We've been, you know, chatting with Ben a bunch over at Tilos. Kind of tell me, what is their background and how have you come to be riding these boards these days?
Say, yeah, I was involved with that brand D-Day. Total fucking idiot was running it. I didn't really know it at the time. But anyways.
The D-Day was the Angel Dust snowboards, right?
Yeah. But all of a sudden, he learned about this factory and we got a couple of boards sent out. And I remember the first time I rode one, I was like, holy shit, this is one of the best boards I've ever ridden in my life, you know? It was like immediate, just bouncy and snappy and lightweight. And then when D-Day kind of dissolved, and those guys, I think, you know, they've been running that factory and different factories in China for, I don't know, 30 years, probably collectively 100 years, you know? And so they just started, you know, small, or a brand of their own, like, and, you know, because they had the factory already, so... I think once it got a little bit of gasoline in the tank, so to speak, they contacted me. And yeah, I was more than stoked to come back and work with all those guys. They're really cool, you know? Yeah, just the boards are fucking solid. You know, that's what I always go back to. I'm like, holy shit. There's like, you know, people come over to my house right now. I have like three or four of them here and they just trip out on them. They pick them up. They're like, holy shit, you know? Yeah, they're fucking good boards. And, you know, it's funny to me, the whole, like, how people are like, you know, made in USA on snowboards. But, you know, with the actual pieces of snowboarding things that they put against their naked, raw, bare body.
Right.
All made in China. You know what I mean?
I'm glad you mentioned the US snowboard thing because, you know, a while back I did an article on like the best North American snowboard brands. And like, yeah, there's a few people actually putting the boards together here in the States. But yeah, where's all that material coming? The fucking, the epoxies, the resins, the fucking metal.
And not only that, but like say the foam in their goggles, the lens in their goggles,
oh,
the
shit.
Long underwear they wear.
Oh,
that's
shit.
What I mean by the shit that they actually put on their body. They don't care where it comes from. They're not like, get USA made long underwear.
Right.
Then I'd fucking start listening to those guys. But you know, I was thinking one day, like, just that whole, like, who built your board thing, right?
Right.
It's just become this euphemism for made in the USA for a bunch of liberal people and brands that, you know, you're not supposed to have pride in made in the USA anymore, right?
Right.
Yeah, you're supposed to hate our country. So instead of saying made in the USA, it is who built your board. That's a new euphemism for that, you know? And it's just, and that could be twisted around so fucking fast.
And then like, look at the snowboard shape or like the profiles, like camber obviously worked, never wasn't working. And now all the brands like have these full cambered lines. I mean, Never Summer, those guys, I've had a long relationship for years with them, and they're so pissed at me because I keep telling them that their split boards having this crazy rocker camber underfoot and the, you know, Never Summer was the guys that them and Libtech sued each other over the banana or the reverse camber or rocker, whatever the fuck they were calling it. And when you watch people make snowboard turns during that era, it's like nobody could even put the board on that freaking rail, like on an edge. And like, I think that's where the Telos boards, like when I jumped on and any of my team and all of us are kind of in that 40 to 50 year old range, it's like, whoa, these boards are familiar. Like this just does what it needs to do. And that felt natural. Like, okay.
You know, like I do like both, you know what I mean? I like a camber board. I like some rocker boards. The whole idea of just the profiles, it just got ridiculous, you know, just same with the shapes now. They're so...
Oh, the bat tails and the nose with the weird little fucking not a point.
Looking at this Gentem catalog last night, I just couldn't believe how many fucking boards were in their line. And I always, used to think like, you know, when brands just get so just blown up, like I remember just going to the trade show 10 years ago, probably. Whose brand was it? I don't know. I think it was Union. I saw George, you know, and, you know, I saw him start that company. So I was stoked to see this big Union booth. And I'm always proud of my friend, whether I like the product or not, of which I like Union. But I just remember kind of walking up to him a little bit buzzed at some point going, like, so how many bindings do you have now? You know, and he started going over the line. I was like, how do any of them differentiate from the other? They all boil down to the 1986 fucking design of two straps and a high back. Nothing's fucking changed in 30, 40 years now.
Well, and like you mentioned Gentem, you know, I mean, they've got like 40 snowboards in their line. The quiver boards, I don't know. For me, I like more of a traditional directional board. Something that I could ride top to bottom if I want to rip pow, cool, or if I want to rip powder, cool.
I don't want to lug like five snowboards anywhere, you know?
No. You know, if I want to drop a cliff, cool. Oh, cool. I can go into the pipe. Like, I want that one board.
I love that. My 156 is best for that because it's so good in the ski area, you know?
For sure. And there's a guy here in Jackson. It's called Franco Snow Shapes. And he saw what Gentem was doing and he's like, oh, I'm going to make these, you know, handmade, you know,
made in the USA,
one-off, yeah, very, you know, made in the US, and he charges $1,500 a board, and I'm like, who the fuck is buying this stuff? But he's in Jackson, and he's kind of marketed. It's like, oh, dude, if you live in Jackson or you're on vacation, you need a specific powder board, and this is the guy making them here in town, and I'm just like, to me, that's dumb. I mean, fuck.
It's so dumb. It's just such a... like some pretty bottom feeder tact, you know. I'll just sell expensive fucking wall boards to, buzz tourists when they, you know, get into their Jackson trip.
I love that you said that because I was like, if I had one of these, I'd probably just put it on the wall because it looks like a piece of art, not something you'd actually, and it's not the most functional. Like, fuck, go take a 180 fishtail out on a big day and see how that works.
Oh, dude, there's nothing worse than when you see some dude with a bit. I mean, even in Alaska, there's not even room for that type of shit up there.
Fuck no. I remember riding 159s, 161s in Alaska. Everyone's like, bro, 168. I'm like, I won't be able to control that board.
Dude, people used to like flip me shit up there. I mean, I was amongst the first crew up there. And like all the other dudes, every other dude was like, you know, looked like an extra from the set of fucking Sons of Anarchy or something. You know, and like just riding these huge monster boards and, you know, just... call me a pussy because I did a backside butter for 200 yards and passed them on a steep slope. Call me a pussy for that, you know? And I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, okay, fucking Barney Rubble, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it's like, I rode 160s, 162s the whole time up there, you know?
Okay, what's the story on your new snowboard that's coming out with these guys? Or it's the 2021 model, or... where can people, if they want to shred like you or just see a fucking killer guitar, what's the deal with that?
In what way?
Yeah, like what's the board? You know, what do you like about it?
It's a 156 that I kind of based on. I didn't sit down and trace it. I just remember riding the 156 Fish that I really liked of all these boards I rode in the early 2000s. That one always stuck with me, you know. You wouldn't quite say if I was on a desert island and had one snowboard because you couldn't even use it on a desert island. But, you know, I've always just liked that 156 Fish. And I like the taper. And so that's what that board has. It has a nice taper, nice wide nose, and you should set it back. Like I set it back on the furthest back inserts.
I'm going to stop you right there. I set every one of my boards back in the farthest fucking the backest inserts. And like people, the industry get pissed. They're like, you're not mounting these boards in the reference point. I'm like, I ride fucking backcountry powder every day. Like if I mounted a board in the middle, I would be pissed.
Like, you know, think of a surfer just fucking flying down the wave, you know, pumping it, and then going up to snap off the wave, and he's standing in the middle of his board.
In the middle of the board. Yeah, good luck like, with that, huh? Bro.
Like, he just fucking, it just wouldn't even work. And it's, I like that. And just skating and surfing, it's like based on your back leg, you know, to pivot around, to move around, you know.
Yeah, the front leg's just barely fucking doing nothing. It's just like, nah, 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 it's okay, cool, like a little of this. Well, man, I really appreciate this chat. This was actually almost twice as long as most of the podcasts we do. And I knew it was going to be fun because, you know, you've just kept it real the whole time. And like I said, like if you're listening to this podcast right now and you like it, just hit pause, go get the Rad Matters podcast because it's great, man.
The name is, I think, I found, because I fucked around with it the other day, just good, like, say, searching my name on Apple Podcasts or the other podcast stuff. I think my name brings it up faster.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, it's solid. And I think, well, you got 10 episodes now or something. Are you trying to put episodes out regularly or is it just kind of when you're...
Yeah, like I'll get there, I think, eventually, probably in the next month. I'm just trying to just get them out there and just have a little base. Like I didn't even really want to start doing too many interviews with people until like I felt like I don't want to feel like I depend on an interview, you know? I want to be able to.
I agree 100%. And I actually, when I started the podcast, my first like 10, 15 episodes were just me just rambling and talking.
Yeah, that's what it you should become pretty proficient at that before you bring someone else in, you know?
And then I'd get interviews and I'd be like, oh shit, what am I going to do next week? Like, how do I top that? You know? And I was like, oh, I don't want to play that game. Fuck.
Exactly. I've just got enough stories. I just have to find that like motivation point. Like, you know, okay, I'm done with the day. The kids have eaten, they're asleep. This, you know, like all these things have to line up, you know, and then I have to like get stoked on snowboard, whatever. It's working out and it's been fun, you know.
Well, I think you're doing it right. I know that George Dobis loves your podcast right now if he's listening in, you know, from above.
Fuck yeah.
You know, it's so cool that you're able to actually go and spend time with your children now and, you know, you're in Hawaii and, you know, the kiting. And I mean, I've just got into the foil surfing here lately. And I mean, there's just,
yeah, I've been foiling a lot, not a lot, but I've been foiling lately. And, shit, it's like, I don't know. It's really funny to me, the kite surfing thing. Cause like snowboarder buddies of mine, like every, so they'll just like kite surfing fucking, and I'm like, wow, that's exact reaction you gave me to snowboarding in the late 80s. Okay. I'm going to go with it then, you know?
Yeah, it turns out the Waterman, Kehlani and Laird and all those dudes, they can kite too. Like, come on.
Yeah, and if you want to talk athletics, man, like that Kyle Lenny, is just, he's a different planet than any snowboarder could ever dream or wish of, you know? It's like, that guy is so fucking gnarly.
Well, and there's been a few times where they've taken dudes like that and brought them out into snowboarding, you know, like Andy Irons and stuff like that, and they can pick it up pretty quickly on a powder day.
Anybody can, right?
That doesn't work for the best snowboarder in the world to try and go surf. It's like, and you're humble.
No, like I always said, like the thing, you know, snowboarding was the first action sport that you could teach like your dad to do in a weekend. You know, you could have a mini ramp 3 feet high. You could pad your dad to the fucking teeth. And over the weekend, he's not, at the end of the weekend, not going to be able to drop in and do, just nick a backside grind.
For sure.
Not going to have it. You're not going to drop in on a shoulder high wave and just be able to do a small, not even gnarly, just a turn into the wave and go with it. That's good. It takes a lifetime. And like, but snowboarding, that's why it blew up, because anybody can do it. And that's why the industry's fucked, because anybody can get into the industry.
Right. There's just a constant new flow of people. And it's like, oh, there's the next person. There's the next trick. Ba, 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 bam. Okay. You're out.
Like skateboarding, they just don't let like just no one out of nowhere just rise up in that sport industry and just, you know, just be that guy because he says he's that guy.
Right.
You know, but yeah, that's a whole nother page.
Fuck. Well, right on, man. this was good.
Yeah, no, that was a fun talk.
Yeah, we'll do it again sometime. And, you know, I just keep calling people out and keeping it real. And, I think that people right now are so politically correct and just worried about offending people. And then, you know, all my friends that are in the industry right now as athletes, I'm like, well, what's your exit plan? And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, dude, you've got a couple years right now. Like, are you going to write?
Yeah. And be like, hey, guys, guess what? See that dude, Terrier? The best of the best, 1 in a billion. That's the best that's going to happen to you. That's where you're headed, to the fucking trash bin.
Right. It's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Fucking, so you're not going to do this anymore. You know, it's like there's nothing. They took all the heroes away. You know, you got to have that in life. You got to be able to look up to people that have done something for a long time, you know?
You know, I never thought of us as snowboarders, like getting older or the sport in general, but like, dude, this is a wake up call. Like all the new kids, they're skiing. Every one of my friends that has kids, they put them on skis.
It's been like that since 2005. I'm telling you, man, that the ski industry, that did not happen on accident.
No, for sure. And that's a huge wake up call, because I doubt that kid that grows up skiing and learns to ski and becomes proficient is one day going to just be like, oh, cool, I'm just going to start snowboarding now. I mean, it's like, yeah, you want to be humbled, maybe, but the odds are going to be slim to that, and vice versa. I don't think the guy that snowboards and gets really proficient is going to be like, oh, cool, I'm just going to like give it up and start skiing. Like, maybe. Fuck, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a twisted world.
Cool, man. Well, I appreciate it.
Okay, cool. That was sweet.
Tilo sponsored this episode, so we'll give him a shout out. And
yeah, Tilo's.
Keep it up, man.
I'm like, have I been pronouncing it wrong the whole time?
Fuck, I think I'm the one, man. Yeah,
that's funny, huh? It's one of those ambiguous words, you know?
Yeah.
That, you know, it's that's what I kind of like about it.
Yeah. Solid, man. Well, enjoy Hawaii, and hope to be able to shred with you one of these days.
All right, bro. Nice talking to you.
Cool. Thanks, Mike. Bye.
Bye.
All right, thanks for tuning in. That was episode number 44 of the Everything Snowboarding and More podcast. Once again, Tilo Snowboards was our sponsor. Mike Rankwit actually has a pro model with Tilo, so the timing on this was just epic. For more information on Tilo Snowboards, check out telossnowboards.com, and it might be called Telos. Again, we're trying to figure that out, but telossnowboards.com, and man, you can thank me later.